Hello, and welcome to Insights Edge from the Lagos Business School Management Hub. With our finger on the pulse of the business world, we're committed to bringing you insightful conversations with thought leaders, industry experts, and visionaries who are at the forefront of their fields. I'm your host, Emma Matar, and I'll be your guide as we delve into the latest trends, timeless strategies, and cutting-edge ideas to solve challenges prevalent in the African business landscape. Stay tuned. Welcome to Insights Edge, brought to you by the Lagos Business School Management Hub. Today on the show, we have Mr. Idoyin Enang. Mr. Idi Enang is a proven reform-minded business leader with expertise in strategy, business management, organizational design, marketing, and sales operations. Over his illustrious career spanning over 30 years, he has held key positions at executive management levels across Africa. He has built and transformed several global brands, including Guinness, Coca-Cola, Cadbury, Samsung Electronics, and L'Oreal. His exemplary leadership and service have earned him awards and recognition, including fellowships of the UK's Chartered Institute of Marketing and the National Institute of Marketing Nigeria, where he serves as the president and chairman of the governing council. He is currently the CEO of Corporate Shepherds Limited, a social enterprise focused on developing and enhancing people and organizational capacity. He is an executive in residence here at the Lagos Business School and is a sought-after speaker at business and leadership conferences. He also hosts a popular radio program called Navigate with ID. Welcome to the show, so we're so happy to have you.
Thank you very much, MM. It's good to be here.
Amazing. Today on the show, we'll be looking at understanding cross-geographic marketing in Africa. You have extensive experience working with brands across various industries and regions and helping them navigate the complexities of marketing in diverse geographic markets, which is essential for brands looking to expand beyond their home country. Jumping right into it, my first question is, can you explain to our listeners the concept of cross-geographic marketing and its significance for brands expanding in Africa, particularly in Nigeria?
Well, thank you very much, MM. Cross-geographic marketing, that's quite that's a mouthful from the standpoint of bringing it down to brass tacks. I believe that this is talking about taking your product or service across geographies. So the first thing that I'll say, you can't get into a cross-geographic setting without having a product that has that international scope. So permit me to say that from an analogy standpoint, you must have a product and you must have a place where you are known. And you must be so known that you traversed or beyond your normal climb, and then you're ready to take on this product of yours into other spaces. So in that space, you're now talking about cross-geographic marketing. And that comes with its own attendant issues, challenges, and opportunities. But I'll centralize this within the context of my experience. I mean, I've been privileged to work. You've mentioned earlier brands that are cross-geographic in nature, whether it's Guinness, whether it's Coca-Cola, whether it's L'Oreal or Cadbury. And what it means, each of these brands never emanated from Nigeria, but they are firmly rooted in Nigeria, and not just Nigeria, across Africa and parts of the world. So what is the philosophy behind it? If I take a brand like Coca-Cola, which is very American-centric, you'll find out that the original base will be America. And naturally, going outside America means that the brand must have transcended beyond America. So coming into Nigeria, for example, the pathway has always been from a trading standpoint. So you need to go in there, trade, and then put all of that in context. But there's a very big factor. The big factor is a people factor. And people here is not just about the consumers or end users, but you're speaking to the people who will also work ultimately in your company, for your company, and also to bring the brand to life. But even before you make that step of faith, you need to understand the nuances. You also need to understand whether your product or brand resonates with the people. Mm. And so the people factor is a big one. Now, the bigger piece of that people is that you need to send emissaries. You need to go and recce.
Yeah.
So it's almost, now permit me to use an analogy using a marriage.
Okay.
You don't get up and just say, I want to marry this woman. No, you start by, you know, doing what you do best. Look at her. She has the attributes, mm-hmm. blah, blah, blah. Then your family will send emissaries to go spy. And the spying really, the values, who are the father, the mm-hmm. parents, the family. And then you can come back. And then you have at least some sense that I'm going into a relationship that I have absolute confidence. So you can't step into a market without understanding the cultural nuances and the values of the people.
Mm.
And you cannot take that for granted. So that is the first thing that happens. And that on its own then allows you tailor your product, to be able to meet the cultural / beneficial direction that the people want. So it's back to the people, which will be your consumers, back to you, the people who will be your customers. So even when you're trading, you need a channel. How are you going to get to the ultimate consumer? So cross-geographic marketing is huge. It starts from the idea. It starts also from the footprint. My product is here, and people start yearning for it. But you need to, before you consummate that relationship or marriage, of sorts, you need to do some, you know, basic, or take some basic steps like I've mentioned.
Amazing. I want to speak to what you just mentioned about cultural nuances and cultural considerations before moving into a market.
Yeah.
What are some critical cultural considerations that brands should be aware of when implementing cross-geographic marketing strategies?
I think the first thing you must, it's about the language and the messaging.
Mm.
And you must also be sensitive around the beliefs. Okay, you can't take a product into a market where, for example, there are certain elements that they forbid culturally. And your product is either, from an input standpoint, a byproduct of that particular ingredient, that is forbidden.
Mm-hmm.
It's a taboo. So you need to understand to that extent and depth. Now, if it's a service, you need to also understand what the cultural dynamics would be if that service comes to play. And that in itself will guard the way you are going to send or decode the messages being sent. That brings it to the language. Language is a leveler.
Mm.
How are you going to communicate the intrinsic and extrinsic benefits that your product does carry?
Mm-hmm.
And you need to then typify it in a way that drives understanding and allows communication to flow between you and the ultimate end user. And even the man that is the intermediary, which you may call your channel, reseller, whatever name you want to give to it, but that person that helps you in the chain to get it to the ultimate user. So I think, you know, those are very critical elements. But if you permit me to use something, I know I love this whole thing about weddings and marriage.
Okay.
Because of the family structure. If you take the sub-Saharan Africa as an example, now traditional weddings happen across sub-Saharan Africa. So if you have a product and you want to take a wife, for example, and whether you're from Nigeria, whether Igbo, Yoruba, Ghana, let's say the Fante way, South Africa, Zulu, if it's East Africa, Kenya, let's say you're Kikuyu, one thing is necessary that you must do, and that is the bride price.
Mm.
We all pay a bride price. The question is how? It is not the same way across board. Some pay before, some pay during, some pay after. But the essential ingredient there, you must...
The bride price
is a symbol that this man, this woman are now put together as husband and wife traditionally from a cultural standpoint. And that's very, very strong, because in taking your brand or product into a cross-geographic context, you must understand the enabler. So if it is that the bride price is key, you must understand that you can't have a one-size-fits-all type of message that will cut across everybody. The how is very important. Could it be that this market needs it before? Could it be that this particular market needs it after? That is where understanding the dynamic comes in for a successful union or relationship between your brand and the end user.
Amazing. I'd like to speak to your experience. I know you've been in the business for a long time. You've seen several cross-geographic marketing efforts made. Could you share examples of some successful cross-geographic marketing efforts in Nigeria or other African countries? What would you say made them effective?
I think you can
give us a case study, if you like.
Well, a case study, there are several, to be honest. And one that jumps out very clearly is Coca-Cola. Mm. I was a brand manager for Coca-Cola way back. I joined the Coca-Cola company in 1997. And one of the unique things about brand Coca-Cola, it has the character of a friend. So you find, yes, the brand would mean different things to many people. But what makes it stand out is the fact that Coca-Cola is able to infuse itself into the lives of everybody and anybody. Mm. And that starts from the positioning. The positioning of the brand speaks to all consumers around the world, that this is the beverage that gives you deep down refreshment for the body, mind, and spirit. Mm. Now, when you look at the body, mind, and spirit, those three categories are now brought to life by way of local adaptations and local activities, whether it's promotion, whether it's the advertising, whether it's about the body, that is the refreshment you get, the taste, five degrees a bottle of Coke gives you that ultimate, you know, pleasure, and as a utility. Now, for the mind, it kind of keeps you on that reshaping platform. So what is refreshment? You're watching a game of soccer, and it's the Olympics. Coca-Cola sponsors. You get into a nursery school, a secondary school, you'll find back in the day, there's a directional sign that tells you Coca-Cola. And then you leave Nigeria and you're traveling to Cameroon, anywhere. As you get in there, there's a big sign, Coca-Cola, ice cold Coca-Cola, refreshing. Now, you may not know anybody in that city, but you have a friend, and that friend is Coca-Cola. And that adaptation on ice brings it to every part or nook and cranny, whether it's your locality, whether it's your local government, whether it's your state, whether it's your heaven, and whatever place it is, you find that it permeates everything. And you would find, if you step into another country, you'll find the same message in the local format or adaptation, and then globally they have what they call a patternade. The patternade now speaks to what Coca-Cola represents. So it's Christmas time and they talk about the Coca-Cola magic, and everyone has been able to see that little train that brings prizes. And guess what? Who is that? Santa is synonymous with Coke. So if there was one brand I could really speak to in the course of my career that exemplifies that cross-geographic marketing plus the local adaptation and fit, I think brand Coca-Cola does it. And don't let my other, you know, former employers feel bad. I could go on and on about Coke. It was a brand that, you know, we always talk about romancing the brand. It's a brand that when you do that, it gives you, you know, that deep down refreshment in multiple ways.
Amazing. Now I'd like to talk about challenges, really. One would think that, you know, with successful marketing, you could just, like you've mentioned, just take your, you know, take into consideration the local nuances, but it's not as straightforward.
Yeah.
There's still some challenges that brands would encounter on the way. So what challenges would you say brands typically face when trying to market across diverse regions, and how can they overcome these challenges?
The first one is the regulatory challenge. You can come out of whatever country and you want to step into another country. You must ensure that your brand meets with the regulatory context and requirements of where you're going. Otherwise, you will be considered persona non grata. It can come either by way of fit, it can come by way of saying to you, you are abusing the privilege of our status. So regulatory dimensions, that's why it's very important that deep dive needs to happen. Remember I said that recce, they must have that recce to understand from a legal framework, from a political framework, from an economic framework, you would just see that, does this really fit? Can we go there? There are some places that you may not be welcome. And so if you are found there, you can easily say, I wasn't brought there. Mm. Maybe some consumer carried it in his suitcase and brought it in, but I didn't. Mm. That's regulatory challenge is the first one. The second one really sits around ethics. A lot of big brands, a lot of companies that really have what you call larger than life image need to live above board. Ethical leadership. Now, whilst it may be considered a huge benefit, it is very difficult keeping it. Mm-hmm. So how do you stay in a place where offers and bribes are being given? You will have a code of business conduct as an answer to that. How do you survive the ethical challenges? You need to have a code of business. Mm-hmm. Your suppliers, the way you supply to the to your retailers, your staff, employees, everybody needs to sign that code, and they need to understand that this is what we stand for. And that answers to that. But do you still have breaches? Yes. So there must be consequence management. And if there are no consequences, then you are leaving yourself very open, and your flanks are open, and you could do what? Batter your reputation. And reputation is what keeps the brand. The other thing is, you know, ethics brings sustainability. Sustainability is not just in terms of the business, but even the future. Whether it's in terms of profit, whether it's also in terms of the planet, that is the environment. Those are the challenges that a lot of brands face, because you might go to a place where they need you to be eco-friendly. And if you are not eco-friendly, it automatically bastardizes whatever strategy you have, because the format in which you are presenting yourself is not, again, meeting the regulatory demand. And sometimes you may have gone in and then suddenly regulatory issues come up, or policies of government. That's another challenge. Depending on where you sit, government policies could actually impact on a brand or a company that is well established. And what's the way out? The way out is to be socially responsible, making sure you understand and be a friend of, not necessarily the friend of the government, but it's saying that you are an ethical producer of good. And what does good mean? That you're looking at the citizenry, you're looking at the population, and you are doing things to help enhance the corporate responsibility. And that's corporate social responsibility brings, you know, a whole spin into that space. And I could go on and on. But the last one I want to talk about that's a challenge is actually about growing local talents. You must invest in the local people. Talent and the people.
Yes.
Because they are the ones that will make you stay and remain. You can't come in there and stay with expatriates. Even if expatriates come, they're transferring knowledge, and their job is to pass that knowledge to a generation who would take it on, and then it becomes more local. And that's typically is a major challenge area, because for some reason, the excuse is always, no, we can't find the right people, we don't know. But
wow, you've touched on so much, from ethics to corporate social responsibility. It's really mind-blowing. My next question is, like, how important would you say it is for brands to, you already touched on it, but I'd like us to go back, and how important would you say it is for brands to adapt their messaging to resonate with local audiences while maintaining that consistent global brand identity?
Yeah, it's very important. And it also starts from understanding the consumer. So how do you try to understand the consumer? It starts from doing some form of basic research. It comes from information. Mm-hmm. Not all information you'll garner just by sitting in the room. You need
to go into the field.
You need to create some immersion points. Mm. And the immersion could be household-wise, could be in terms of how the people, where they meet at the point of consumption or the point of buying. So those are the things that will give you insights. And automatically, those insights become the consumer language. I say to people, if you look around you now, MM, you'll see some brands being named chairman. Many years ago, when I launched Satzenbrau, I was a brand manager for Satzenbrau. Satzenbrau had different names, Sergeant Brown, you know, skirt and blouse. Mm. That's the consumer language. So if I get that, I will then weave my messaging so that it now connects. Mm. So I'll say, this is Sergeant Brown. Mm. And you understand this man is speaking to the... And some brands will say Omoluabi. The meaning they call Omoluabi is synonymous with the brand. Mm. And that's what they've done. They've been able to capture the essence from a consumer language and turn it into a standpoint of messaging and activation to allow the consumers be able to easily say, that's the brand for me.
And I recommend
when you get to that point where people can say, that's the brand for me, then you've done what? You build loyalty. Mm. And once you build loyalty, now it's about frequency. How often would they consume you? How often will they ask for you? That's where the volume comes. Mm-hmm. That's where the value comes. And that's where the profit will emanate. As simple as that.
Amazing. Now that we're winding down, I'd like you to leave parting words or words of wisdom for C-suite executives or business owners. Let me say that again. What parting advice or words of wisdom would you offer to C-suite executives or business owners who are considering expanding their market reach across geographical borders?
Yeah, I think what I'll say to them, invest in people. Be brutally honest with people. Create a character of learning. Build an ecosystem where innovation thrives. And you would find that people are your best assets to glory. Many C-suites, many executives make the mistake. They tell you people are our best assets. Well, I'll give you a classic example. Whenever they are having their business meetings, what do they discuss first? Is it people, or they discuss about the money or the volume? And they put people last. When they get to that part of it, they are all tired and they say, oh, HR, well, send us a memo. 9 out of 10 executives will do that. They focus on what matters to them. Yet, on the public arena, they'll say people are assets. Are they truly assets? If you truly want to convert and to make sustainability the watchword, invest in people and mean it and do it.
Thank you so much for joining us, Mr. Anang, and thank you for your valuable contributions on the topic. Thank you for tuning in to Insights Edge. Do stay tuned for more insightful episodes.
That's all for this episode of Insights Edge by the Lagos Business School Management Hub. We're grateful to our distinguished guests and experts who shared their wisdom with us today. Their perspectives help us navigate the complex landscape of business in Africa, and we're honored to have them as a part of the Insights Edge community. Until next time, keep seeking, keep learning, and keep pushing the boundaries of what's possible.